welcome to Rachel's Ramblings. Thank you for being here again today. So today we will be talking to Lola. And as with the rest of these talks, we're going to be exploring her experience of being queer and black in the UK. And today the focus is alternative relationships as she sees it, the queer black community here in London. And also we discuss a little bit about what impact colonialism might play in attitudes towards the LGBTQ community. So yeah, as per usual, I'm going to try and keep my talking to a minimum and let Lola just talk. Enjoy.
London, Hackney and Tower Hamlets and Newham, that little triangle of places that are all near each other in the East End. Newham, Stratford's in Newham.
Oh, right.
The Olympics were in Newham, basically. But no one ever knows where Newham is, unless... Even because, like, I grew up in Hackney, no one knew where Newham was. It was, like, next door. It was the next door borough, but just you just never go in that direction, really. That's where I grew up, although I was born in Lagos, Nigeria. But I've been here since I was 4 months old, so... Although it's, I always mention where I'm... I don't always mention where I'm born, but when people often ask, it's kind of a strange thing, and then they decide something else about you because you weren't born here. It's kind of funny. Now living in South London... which is interesting. Yeah, that's kind of where I'm from. I think the way I feel about myself is something that's quite common for Londoners, which is that you often feel like a Londoner before you're anything else. Like, I don't really feel... I definitely don't feel... like, in my mind, you've almost got ethnicity and culture and race, and they're almost different things. Like, I feel like I can't... Even though this is true or not, I think a lot of us grew up feeling that you couldn't ethnically be English, that English was like an ethnicity and that was white and it was a particular thing. Your nationality is a different thing, and that's something a state, you know, gives you and it's on your passport, and that way I'm British. And then so my nationality I think of as British, although I'm dual national with Nigeria, and then I think of my ethnicity as Yoruba more than Nigerian, because it's got 80 some languages in the whole country and there isn't that, not necessarily much similarity between them. My experience is going to be different from someone from the east of Nigeria. It's going to be different from someone from the north. And I don't know enough because I never lived there. So my experience is specifically Yoruba. So like so many people, kind of what they call it, third culture kids or whatever, you're in the diaspora, which is its own specific space as well. Like it's neither here nor there. Because I'm a black Londoner and I grew up and I'm in my early 30s. I'm going to be 33 this year. Where I was in London at the time I grew up, the dominant cultures were kind of Jamaican cultures, as kind of youth culture, and then music culture and all the rest of it. So that, I think that colours a lot of what my... And if you're, particularly if you're like in working class communities, that was definitely dominant. And it still dominates in lots of ways in the language, but it's starting to die away now that the numbers are changing demographically. But in my mind, that was the dominant thing. And so that obviously isn't indigenous to the country or to the city, and it's transient. Like, it probably wasn't like that 20 years before. And isn't that like that now, to be honest? So I think that's quite a big part of it. But also just like where I grew up was really genuinely mixed in a way that also I'm not sure can be anymore because everything's so expensive and all gentrification debate and all the rest of it. So I went to primary school with people from literally from everywhere. And there wasn't a dominant group, like in terms of numbers, really. Even if you were areas where there were lots of black people, they would be very different from different countries and different parts and wouldn't really share that much culturally or what have you. So I kind of miss that. I'd love to have that. If I had kids, I'd love to have that kind of mix as well, but I don't think it's even really possible in London anymore. But yeah, a lot of that in terms of ethnicity is definitely part of it. And then because I don't know where to situate myself in terms of class. I don't know how to answer the question. I leave other people to decide. But I grew up in a council estate. Parents didn't have much money, but they both have university education. So all that stuff kind of, I don't know, lends a certain type of Londonness that when I meet people that I work with who are quite middle class and have moved to London, they have a very different understanding of what London is. And, you know, they meet people with London accents and they're like, oh my God, you speak, it's like, people speak like that here. That's the city, you know. You have Cockneys, you have people with South London accents, you know, whatever. But they don't encounter that. So my partner's Yoruba as well. And she grew up in Nigeria for a long time and went to university there. So she's got more of a modern sense of what Yoruba culture is, like a current sense, whereas my parents left 30 years ago and basically hadn't gone back until quite recently. So as with most diaspora, probably your experience is like a time capsule of what something was like then that's kind of been reformed here. And also my parents are from different, like, religious backgrounds, different parts of the country. So my dad was brought up Muslim. So me and my sister and I both have Muslim names among our other names. But he's not interested in any religion particularly. He believes in God, so he let us get brought up in my mum's Christian. But I don't know, they're just very particular. Like, they also are, like, from a particular era that was just before, like, the huge, hardcore Pentecostalist Christianity. So my mum didn't grow up with that, although her younger siblings did. So it's even, like, within the family, they've got very different experiences of what some of that stuff means and what it means to be Yoruba in the context of, like, Christian faith and all the rest of it. It means eating certain foods. It means having, I guess, certain attitudes about, or I guess, certain life experiences living in a country that was just coming out of colonialism when they were kids. Mm-hmm. So it's very, you know, Queen's English, all that kind of thing. I didn't speak English until I was about four, although now I only speak English. But I do understand Yoruba, and that kind of, I don't know, it means for, like, I think if you have other languages in your head, you have different ways of understanding things. Yeah, there are certain experiences and colours and things that don't exist if you don't have the words for them. So if you have multiple ones, I think you have multiple ideas sometimes. But none of that is really anything tangible, I suppose. I don't know what being Yoruba means beyond a lot of that stuff, really. Well, so my dad's from Lagos, which is like the London equivalent, in as much as it's incredibly cosmopolitan and has always been. So they were like the seat of empire in like Nigeria, and so they're a lot more westernized in a lot of ways, and it's more entrenched there. So I remember going to the British Museum and looking at some like bronzes from Benin, the Kingdom of Benin, which is in Nigeria and across, and asking my dad, "Oh, what would have been like your ancestral gods?" And he was like, if I'm from Lagos, so people have forgotten that so long ago, and even if they hadn't, they wouldn't admit it because that would be seen as like super like not civilized. Whereas my mum, her family are from a lot more rural place. And so her dad, it was only her dad's generation, like her dad himself converted to Christianity. So she has memories of seeing Yoruba traditional religion, or at least bits of it in her life, or in like shrines in the house and that kind of thing, which then got kind of removed and her dad went super religious and that was kind of it. But it means that although we don't have relatives that I'm aware of that practice anything outside of Islam or Christianity, so like we were in Nigeria recently about a couple of years ago for my grandfather's funeral. And one of my aunts, there's quite a variety of ages. And one of the much younger aunts was referring to a really terrible thunderstorm that like destroyed something. And she made reference to Shango, which is like the god of like iron and thunder. And my mum was genuinely shocked because people just don't refer to that stuff now. And my mum's not even, she's always educated about this, as like a cultural thing. And like something that's part of our history and never been ashamed of it, but at the same time it's like, but that's, you know, I don't believe in that, it's mythology. So to have them kind of refer to it as like a legit, like just in such a casual way, which I was really shocked by and really surprised by. So I don't know how much that stuff still permeates like what people do, even if they call themselves Christian or Muslim. Like it's always, my mum always said it's on the surface, it's for a lot of Nigerians really. If I'm asked, I'll often be really round and circumspect and say I'm currently with a woman, I've dated men, I've dated women. Like I'll say queer if I have to because I find it really politically useful, and I'll say bisexual because I don't like bisexual, but that's the fact that it's become a bit of a slur. Yeah. I'll take that, but I don't feel that strongly either way, to be honest. I have a cousin who, she is gay and she's married to another woman, and I think we've been in touch on Facebook and stuff over the years, but because my dad didn't grow up with those siblings, so to kind of get close to those cousins would feel a little bit weird in some ways. We knew that uncle and aunt through growing up, but again, weren't that close. But she definitely is gay.
Yeah. And that's on your dad's side?
That's on my dad's side.
And does your dad know about that?
Yeah, I've seen them at family gatherings sitting in the back, like being all quiet. But they're also quite separate because they didn't grow up with their dad. Like she didn't grow up with her dad. There's a lot of other separation things. So I don't really think that her being gay is really the issue. Yeah, if it were the issue, she wouldn't bring her wife to stuff. Like you just kind of come and go, but she brings her.
It's something that you speak about with your parents?
I have not told them. Okay. I will in between now and April. I kind of have to get on with it. I've set this date. It's kind of complicated. I don't really know. My parents are really like, they're quite academic. Mm-hmm. they're quite kind of intellectual about a lot of things. A lot of things they're not, but they're quite intellectual about a lot of things. And they're not, and they know lots of stuff, and they're really clever, and they are not homophobic as far as anything they've ever said. Nothing's ever indicated that to me. My mum got really upset once at work because there was this white guy who had been really quite rude to her for a long time, and she didn't know why, and it turned out that he assumed she was going to be homophobic because she was African, and she was really like, who the fuck is he, like, what are you talking about? I just think she'll be a bit worried because it's like a whole different thing to everything you imagine for your kids, and most people see their kids as like a reflection of them, so it's hard to kind of see something completely different for you. And she tends to respond to any stress with being ill. So even if in the end she's okay, there'll be an initial thing that will not be pleasant. And you feel it's hard to not feel responsible if you're going to make someone essentially be ill. There was one relationship with a family friend that ended badly because he cheated and he was weird about stuff and whatever. And he was, his mum was a friend of my mum's from like the village type thing. And my mum got so distressed by the way that ended that after that I was just like, I can't really involve you in these things because it just upsets you too much. And, you know, I'm probably not going to... It was just too much. So I just haven't ever said anything about anyone I've dated since then at all. Like, it's just until there's a need to, I haven't bothered. People always think I'm straight. It's not one of these kind of stories of like, I'm femme and so assumed to be like, I think a lot of people are read as femme, read as queer and femme. I'm just read as straight anywhere. That's just what has always been the case.
Yeah.
I've got more kind of masculine presenting like Nigerian friends who, including my partner, who get a lot of shit just existing, just going around the walking around with short hair and looking a bit boyish. So I know one that definitely from Nigerians, because she lives in an area like in Hackney with lots of Nigerians around, and she gets less like Nigerian aunties trying to say stuff around her as if she can't understand them and she knows what they're saying. But yeah, that's not been my experience. So I think once I was in a pub with somebody and we were essentially told to like, we were like, someone had grasped on us as like making out in a corner, which we weren't doing, and we were in fact opposite an older straight couple who were making out.
Right,
and okay. Someone came and we got into a bit of a row with the people, and it was what was the pub? It was one that used to be used for, I'm pretty sure, gay sex parties in King's Cross, and then had been taken over by some other people, and clearly they were like not having these two people looking like they're enjoying each other's company, even though we were not doing anything obscene or weird or overly affectionate.
Yeah.
But aside from the odd thing like that, I've been quite lucky not to have had issues really. We get it a bit. I don't get it that much. I think she often gets questioned about who I am to her. It was something that used to happen in barbers a lot. Barbershops, where you'd get these guys quite aggressively asking, who are you to each other? As if, like, what does it matter to you? And why is it so important? And they'll, are you sisters? Are you sisters? Kind of thing.
That was just a way of trying to, like, eke out.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Like, who asks if people are sisters? Who's that interested if people are sisters? I mean, someone once thought she was my mum. That's still my favourite story. Yeah. If that, yeah. And a letting agent. Like, I don't know, trying to get someone to do something, and she was in a different room, and he was like, oh, is that mum? I was just like, no. I can't remember what else I said. It was just so horrifying. People like to be in your business, so they'll find any reason to be in your business. And people like, my mum always used to talk about Nigerians being very, which is like, it's just probably anyone and anyone in a diaspora, but people being very conforming. And it's all about everyone being, you being in a club of some sort. So if you don't conform, then you're always going to be whatever, like, you're outside the mainstream, then that's always a problem for people. And then when you're in, like, a closed diaspora community, then everyone's in your business. I get the impression that people use religion to justify bigotry nowadays, but to be honest, I think I've got more of a sense of how relatively new a lot of that kind of religion is. So I don't think it's that deep in it. I think it's just used as an excuse for it. Because Nigerians definitely use religion as an excuse to do stuff they were doing in the first place. Like, I mean, like, polygamy has always existed, but now people, at least with Islam, can kind of say, oh, well, actually, in Islam, you can technically marry several wives, even though they were doing it anyway. Yeah. And in Christianity, you're not supposed to do that, but they still manage to do it. So it's like, whatever, like, people use whatever reason to do. They were going to do anyway. I don't know, if I go back to what you're saying about colonialism being the reason that this stuff kind of entered culture... Mm-hmm. I think there's two things. I think one is that it's something, again, my parents have talked about as being specifically Victorian, is that there's Victorian behaviours that kind of came along with the British and meant that... so one thing that... I always quote my mum, even though my dad often says these things, was my mum was talking about the way that people refer to people as sir and man, sir. English words, like sir is an English word, but that's something you refer to all kind of elders as. And my mum was like, when you read and you see old accounts of... families and parents of their kids, this kind of authoritarian, hardcore parenting was not there, that came with the Victorians, as happened here. Suddenly you have the nuclear family, the Industrial Revolution, suddenly you have this particular way of doing things. And so it's not, although religion is part of it, it kind of was just a cultural, social change that happened here that they took with them. And I think that was probably true of like alternate sexualities or ways of doing things just generally. Because you can never really just use terms like gay, straight, trans or whatever to like, outside of Western context, they're just different. Like, I was talking to a friend the other day who's Zimbabwean, and she was talking about being an ancestral wife and how there was this thing of like, you might have a particular kind of particularly spiritual, in her case, say grandfather, who kind of comes again later. And so you're kind of, how does she put it? You essentially take, like women would take they would have the spirit of this guy. And so as a result, that would take a wife. And so there were, so that was something that they, that traditionally existed there. So it, yeah, and like a particular ethnic group in Zimbabwe. And so you can't, it's not as simple as kind of saying, or, you know, I've got a lot of friends who have a real problem with people using the word transgender to describe Hijra people in India and Pakistan, because they say there's such a specific cultural phenomenon that it's not as simple as saying, or not seen as simple, but it doesn't directly translate to their experiences to use a word like transgender. So I think it's true that clearly there were like other types of relationships that existed and other types of like gender identities and whatever, but I don't know, I think it's a bit more complex. I don't think I'm there yet. I definitely feel like I'm part of a community. I know a lot of people have problems with the word community. I don't think community, I think there's a difference between friends, family and community. Mm-hmm. And community are the people that, so the only illustration I can think of is when the Orlando thing happened and I went to this really beautiful vigil, which was Latinx led, and it was quite different to the one in Soho. This kind of black British person woke up in tears and said, we need to honour our dead. And then she contacted some Latinx people she knew and was like, you know, what do you people want to do anything, whatever? And they kind of led it, but I think it was her idea. And it was really beautiful. And I remember being there and thinking, like, I've seen so many of these faces around, and if something like this happened in London and these people went, I would feel awful. And that's when I thought, this community. Like, I don't have people's numbers, whatever, but I see them in places, I know vaguely who they are, they're dating this person, whatever. And to me, that was what I thought of as community. So I'm really glad that I have that. I'm not at the point where I think a lot of people I'd call chosen family, but I think it takes me a long time to trust people. I don't think trust for me or love or any of these emotions I don't think they can exist for me without experience with someone and someone being kind of tested with you and you know what the outcome will be. Like I spent all of my like late teens, early 20s with white gay men and my bezzy mate who was not a white gay man, he was an Asian gay man, but it's still very much in that group of people. And yeah, I have no interest in that scene anymore. And I had so much fun there and so much fun in the same venues that maybe lesbians were. I found lesbians really unwelcome. So I just didn't, I just steered clear of those people.
What was it about lesbians that you found
unwelcome? I don't know. It might have been me. It might have been just internally feeling a bit funny. Or it might just be the thing of a clique. And when you're outside of it, it always feels unwelcome. Yeah. Yeah, one of the reasons I realised that I'm not read as femme, but I'm read as straight in gay clubs was that it's not like I was always universally welcomed in them. I think often if you weren't fabulous, basically, you weren't there to entertain them, then they didn't want you there. So if I didn't have the glitter eyeshadow, or I didn't have my afro out, then it could be a problem. But otherwise, I'd have good fun. So anyway, it's been really nice to kind of meet some people who can kind of go against some of the stuff that a lot of the white gay men would say or do or whatever. And just get a sense that there are lots of people with like different experiences, but also a lot of really like similar experiences. I just really love that. Yeah, that's been really useful to me, I think.
Do you think it's hard to date?
Yeah. I mean,
What would you say some of the challenges are to that?
I think it depends on what you want. I've been with the same person for 3 years, but we're in an open relationship. So on one hand, I don't have the stakes with dating, I guess. And the person I was with before then, I shouldn't have been with anyway, for various reasons, for about a year. And then before that, I was with like a cis straight guy, but then also dating this, I don't know. Anyway, depends on what you want. I think there's been a lot of, I think the reason that there is a bit of a cutie pop community and these people that kind of come together as like queer brown people, is a lot of people have come to the same realisation at the same time, which is that they were really struggling to date white people. and just wanted to kind of, and but most of them haven't really experienced dating anybody other than white people. Well, numbers. Well, on one hand, numbers. On the other hand, internalised racism and everyone feeling like there's some status in dating white people. And then also being fetishised and fetishising and all. I think there's lots of different reasons. But because of numbers, it also means it's a bit harder. And, you know, if we're all together, everyone's after the same people. It gets a bit messy. And at least I think there's a lot of traumatised people together in one place, which I think creates its own problems too. And then a lot of people who are really socially aware and wanting to be careful and wanting to do the right thing and maybe not always doing that. I think there's lots of reasons that it's a bit tough.
What do you mean when you say traumatised?
I mean, I just keep coming across so many people with mental health problems, with like just really bad experiences through their lives for lots of reasons. There's lots of like structural racist reasons, I think, for a lot of people. I think a lot of people I'm around are activists and so are really hyper aware of that stuff anyway, and it's hard to know whether those people are more sensitive to those things or actually are just, they just put a name to the things that most people experience and just don't have words for. But definitely I hear far more, like, you know, I never used to hear about the kinds of things I hear about now in the communities that I'm in, as far as people having experienced, I don't know, sexual assault or like, yeah, really bad experiences with police or immigration or the rest of it. Or, you know, homophobia from families and that kind of thing too. When you're marginalised, that's kind of by definition, I think trauma is going to be part of that mostly, although I don't actually feel like I have any myself, but I think I'm fortunate.
Yeah.
And in possibly quite a small minority.
Thank you so much to Lola for agreeing to talk to me today. And thank you to you for listening. As usual, you can continue the conversations at Rachel Ray MCK on Twitter. Until next time, bye.